In any given year, from 500 to 2,000 people go missing in Alaska, totaling 16,000 since 1988. There is one area in particular, known as the Alaskan Triangle, which is particularly concentrated with these cases and other bizarre phenomena. So much so that I decided to put together a film crew to bring awareness to the mysteries of the area, as well as try and locate my missing brother, Stephen. Last month, he embarked on a 2-week solo hiking trip about 250 miles east of Anchorage, Alaska, before completely disappearing without a trace. He did send one last cryptic text before vanishing from the face of the earth. He messaged me the word Eskimo. My film crew set up camp at Mount Blackburn and Wrangell St. Elias National Park, the general region where Stephen is said to have sent his last text message from his cell phone. The majestic beauty of that mountain is undeniable, but at the same time, there's something kind of eerie about the incredible stillness of it all. My crew consisted of one cameraman, Tucker, one boom operator named Jason, and a native climbing guide named Liv. The ascent was tough. The wind was stronger that day than was expected, and snowfall began to grow heavier and heavier as we continued. At a few thousand feet up, we found this ravine and hiked into it. Down inside, we noticed the mouth of a cavern, which had been just barely uncovered by the strong wind. Jason was excited about it, because he said we could record some of the dialogue inside and get cleaner audio, figuring that there was also some chance that Stephen may have taken shelter in there. I obliged. Upon entering the cavern, it was like we had stepped into a different realm. All the noisy chaos of the wind outside had dissipated, and all we could hear was its echo, paired with light repetitive drips from the stalactites above. Liv took a look at her map and realized that the cave we were in was not on there. Her theory about this was that possibly rising temperatures had recently reopened the mouth of the cave, and that it was probably mostly unexplored. I looked to the back and noticed Tucker walking deeper and deeper into the cave, following the wall with his camera.
"There's a marking on the walls over here," he exclaimed,
knowing that that probably meant something good. The rest of us ran over and began to look at it inquisitively. The drawings were very intricate and appeared to be of ancient origins. There was a depiction of an enormous fire in front of a mountain range, with something manlike drawn in front that seemed to gaze out at us from the wall. It had a thick wool overcoat and hood covering its head, with a giant tusk weapon in its hand. The most disturbing thing about it was that the interior of its hood was nothing but darkness, as if it did not possess a face at all. I gazed into the pitch blackness and felt a sense of dread come over me. Liv began spouting off facts about ancient Inuit people in the background, and statements about the discovery of a lifetime. But I didn't even hear all that. I was still too absorbed by that thing's face. That was when I turned and saw something on the ground a bit deeper into the cave. It was a cell phone. I walked over to pick it up and noticed that it was my brother's. I'll always remember it because of his Skeletor iPhone case. This finding wasn't much, but I was ecstatic to have found anything related to him, and I was just ready to know more. Satisfied with our day, we decided to set up camp inside the cave and get some dialogue recorded. After about an hour or so of this, we figured we'd hit the hay and get an early start on the next day. The rest of the group went to sleep pretty quickly, but I had a little trouble with insomnia. That would happen a lot after my brother's disappearance. My mind wouldn't stop running through possibilities of where he was or what had happened to him. which is why I decided to walk into the cave a little deeper. I probably went further than I should have on my own, but it's good that I did because I found a climbing bag, and next to it was an open bag of charcoal, which I realized was the same color as the drawings on the wall. I knew at that point that the illustration was not done in ancient times, but was likely made by my brother. There was also this artifact carved from whalebone with a terrifying smile and these deep-set eyes sitting beside it. Suddenly, I heard Liv shriek from the front of the cave. I turned and bolted back towards the front to see her being ripped out of her sleeping bag by this enormous bear-sized figure in an overcoat. I woke up the guys and grabbed the revolver, running out to help, but it was already too late. Her head was jammed into the ice, her skull completely crushed. I turned back searching for the culprit but saw nothing. We just stood there in horror until this enormous 10-foot spear plunged through Jason's back, spraying blood all over the snow below him. I looked behind him and saw about 50 feet back there was this giant man in an Eskimo coat, his face shrouded in total darkness. He stepped behind this hill and lifted up a full-sized gutted moose over his head in an incredible display of strength, then tossed it several feet in front of him. Tucker and I took off running down the mountain, knowing it was unwise to panic, but we just simply acted. Before I even knew it, though, the man caught up to him and ripped him back with one hand. After that, I just heard screams, terrifying screams, echoing throughout the landscape. Then, just silence, and the wind blowing past me. I slipped and rolled down a hill and stopped just at the edge of a cliff, about 75 feet up, which dropped into a thick patch of snow beneath. I heard his feet clambering down the mountain behind me and knew there was only one thing left to do. I dove off the edge, falling 75 feet and landing on my back in the snow. Luckily, I sunk into it, breaking my fall, even though the hit was hard enough to make me still lose consciousness. I woke up in the hospital. Apparently, before Jason had been killed, he was able to dial 911 on his cell phone, and they sent a helicopter out to find us. They claimed that the whole thing was just me having some sort of hallucination from hypothermia, because they found me buried in the snow. Although they were never able to locate my friends, even after several searches of the area. I honestly do wish it was something like that. I wish that anything was true except what actually happened. You see, the thing is, I just saw the Eskimo outside my window, staring at me. Only this time, he was exposing his face. And it's the face of my brother. Don't ask me how he grew to that size or gained his strength, but I do know it's him, and I know he can't let me live. This story was never supposed to be told. So please, if you're ever thinking about going to Alaska, do not for any reason go into the Alaskan Triangle. Stay far, far away. The Eskimo is always watching. Hey there, Freaksters, it's Mr. Freaky. I hope you enjoyed this original creepypasta. I thought I hated the cold before, but now I don't think I'm ever going skiing again. I wanted to remind everyone to please like and subscribe to the channel, as well as post a comment about the part which you thought was the scariest in the story. As always, have a horrific evening, and stay spooky, my friends.